Good afternoon, everyone. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio. Find us at blogtalkradio.com. It is Wednesday, the 8th of June, 2022. It's the day before the 13th anniversary of the death of Wayman Tisdale, by the way. Just happened to see that in my stuff that pops up. Hey, if you want to contact us, you know the way. Come in through the portal, come into the chat room, or call in 319-527-6706. That is exactly what Sue from New Mexico is doing right now, listening via phone. You can also just email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Go to Facebook, Hank Jones Polysports, or go to Twitter at HPolysports. That's where the good stuff happens lately, anyway. And actually, something's always good on Global Patriot Radio every day of the week. We're getting back to the normal start. Sunday is not the first day of the week. Never has been. Mondays, the Vito Esposito Show with Big Al. 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Mamma Mia, No Sharia. Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, Eric is in with the Cross and the Crescent discussion. Wednesdays, of course, 5:30 Eastern, me, Hank Jones with Hank Jones Poly Sports. Thursdays, 6 o'clock Eastern, Paul Sutliff is in with the Sutliffian Report. Fridays, right around noon, although it can vary, but usually right around noon, Andrew Herod with Conservative Casual Friday, and then Saturday nights, 10 p.m., Don't Miss Radio with Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie, revealing the truth about Islam. And then Sundays, Eric is back. He does double duty. Eric's back with another Cross and Crescent discussion, real interfaith dialogue. And then, you know, if we're not on, there's other shows, too. Airwaves America with Dave and G-Ski, the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show. Joseph Gibson's on with Understanding the Times in Which We Live. Annie with Southern Sense Radio is on. I think I know Fridays, but I think other days. Tim Tapp with Tap Into the Truth. Chief, I always forget the name of Chief's show. These Simple Times or The Simple Life. Chief's on Tuesdays, I'm pretty sure. Holger on occasion goes on Friday nights, although he hasn't the last couple of weeks, I don't think, but always check it out. At home, Electric Hankland is the domain. The little Aussie is in the house. She has eaten. I had to bring her food inside. We're having a little storm. She didn't like thunder. She's a tough little dog, but she does not like thunder at all. And so she uses that as her excuse for me to bring her food in. We feed her raw, as I've told you, and you don't normally want that stuff on the floor, but whatever. Hey, I promised something, and hopefully he's going to deliver. Around the 6 o'clock hour, Vito is going to be in to discuss the new competition for the PGA Tour. It's called the LIV Tour, a Saudi Arabian-backed tour. Several guys have left. Several other people have expressed displeasure with it. So hopefully at 6 o'clock, right around there, Vito will come in. And let's get to our obituaries. Oh, this is sad. Former Minnesota Golden Gopher, multi-NFL team running back Marion Barber III was found dead in his Frisco, Texas apartment. He was just 38. He'd had some difficulties the past several years. He, along with his Minnesota teammate Lawrence Melroney, were the first running back tandem in NCAA history to each rush for 1,000 yards in two consecutive seasons. Very sad loss. He was a really good running back, part of a Minnesota legacy, his father Marion Barber Jr., Gopher star 20 years before. At one time, the Gophers had three running backs slash fullbacks that were dominant ground game, Barber and Maroney and then Thomas Tappe. Man, they piled up a ton of yards under those Gopher backfields with Glenn Mason. Mason loved running the ball, and man, they did it well. It was also announced late last week that Melanie Pillman, she was the widow of WCW, WWF /WWE star, Brian Pillman. She passed away June 1st at 56. She was caught up in some controversial wrestling storylines in the late 90s. They had that staged attack on their home by Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was part of a storyline. And then she was interviewed on WWF Monday Night Raw the night after her husband, Brian, was found dead in his hotel room, age 35. Her son, Brian Jr., posted several announcements and tributes on social media recounting her attempts to reconnect with her children, her and Brian's children. He also noted that though she had made some tough life choices over the years, he said the last time he saw her, she was clean and sober and looking better than he had seen her in many years. Very sad. Today we lost songwriter Hal Bynum. Complications of a stroke and Alzheimer's. He's 87. He's part of the outlaw country movement of the 1970s. One songwriting credit, several, Chains, Papa Was a Good Man. Those were done by Patti Loveless and Johnny Cash. And then, of course, he also wrote Lucille for Kenny Rogers. That gave him a songwriter award, actually two songwriter awards in 1977, both from Country Music Association and the Academy of Country Music. Welcome Indie Hawk also to the chat room, and Holder has jumped into the chat room as well. Holder, you missed my announcement about the obituary for Marion Barber III. Very sad news up there in Minnesota. Friday, we lost Ann Turner Cook at age 95. Now, she was a mystery novelist for many years, but better known as the original drawn model for the Gerber baby. Not much of a baby anymore. Life well lived, I'd say, 95. Sunday, this was announced that rapper Trouble, age 34, passed away as a result of a gunshot. Yeah, it was announced by his ex-girlfriend, Alexis Sky, that he was shot while visiting a friend. It turns out he was shot once in the chest during a home invasion while at the home of a female companion. The suspect did not know Trouble, but was involved in a dispute with the female companion. And then that same day, we lost Bon Jovi bassist and co-founder Alex John Such. Passed away at 70, suffered a heart attack in his sleep. He played on their first five albums, including 1986's iconic Slippery When Wet. Featured Living on a Prayer, Wanted, Dead or Alive. Yeah, if you ever go to a karaoke bar, there's always some dude who like wears his hair a little too close to Bon Jovi style and wants to sing that song. It's the only thing he does. It's like he gears up for the whole damn week to sing that song at karaoke every Friday or Saturday. Not me. Not me. Now, don't let any accusations fly here. Oh, no. Oh, no. Hank does not do Friday night karaoke or any other night. And then this, Monday we lost Jim Seals of Seals and Crofts, provider of this very excellent song. It's called Diamond Girl. Both of them were previously with The Champs. They did that song Tequila. Tequila. They joined after that song. They had several hits. Summer Breeze, this song, We May Never Pass This Way Again, and Get Closer. They also did songs for the films One-on-One, Fooling Around, and they actually did the theme song to the TV version of The Paper Chase. Jim Seals' brother, the late Dan Seals, was one half of the duo England Dan and John Ford Coley. And then to add a little more to the duo theme, his cousin Brady and Croft's daughter Lua later toured as Seals and Croft 2. I wonder if David St. Hubbins from Spinal Tap was there to say, we hope you enjoy the new direction. Also Monday, we lost former Chicago Blackhawks wing Eric Nestorenko at age 88. In addition to being a member of the 1961 Blackhawks Stanley Cup champs, he was noted for his skills as a penalty killer. Yeah, no 1970s era Blackhawk fan can forget that penalty killing line of Nestorenko and Chico Mackey. One thing I didn't know, he played the father of Rob Lowe's character in the hockey film Youngblood. and also served as the film's hockey consultant. That probably wasn't much of a stretch. A little bit of trivia. He was traded to the Blackhawks in 1961. Who did the Blackhawks trade away? Phil Esposito. Yeah, Phil Esposito. That's a little crazy. I mean, that's sort of like trading Lou, the Cubs trading Lou Brock for Ernie Broglio. I'm sure it's, well, yeah, I bet it is unique to Chicago sports. Only Chicago sports teams trade away guys that have no business being traded away. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't know why we do that, but it happens. Also Monday, Harrison Wagner, he's the son of actor Jack Wagner and his ex-wife Christina. He was found dead in a parking lot in Los Angeles. Autopsy is pending. No cause or manner of death has been released. Yeah, Harrison Wagner was 27. And that's a little too sad, don't you think? I sure do. I love this song. Sorry, it's a guitar solo. We can stop it now. The guitar solo's over. I like that guitar solo. It's pretty good. Actually, there's another one that Coda's out song, but... Oh, hey, before we get to anything important, don't forget my friends at Alliance Communication Center, Central Florida's 24-hour call center for messaging and call center services for your medical clinic, hospital, government agency, or other info-gathering services. They'll get the job done. And don't forget, they can work with remote staff as well. So... call them, 800-555-3738, or visit their website, www.alliancecommunications.com. Okay, here it is, folks, Midwesterners. The concert event of the summer is this Saturday in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Celebration Weekend is finally almost here, featuring Bret Michaels and special guest Molly Hatchet. For more info, head to their Facebook page. Just search Shellabration. You know, like you're spelling celebration, but you're doing it as a shell, like a seashell. T. Bodie and the crew promise you good times. You're probably not going to see T. Bodie there because he's just going to be running around like crazy. And hopefully he's healed up from his surgery that he had a month or so ago. Hope so. He was hoping to be able to do it. I've wanted to get back for this the last couple of years. Haven't made it, obviously. Things don't work out. And from where I live, it's not easy. You have to go either through Des Moines or Cedar Rapids. And I mean, it's connections, et cetera. So, yeah, but I swear I'm going to start planning for it for next year. And not to mention the fact this weekend, I actually have to fly to Ohio to pick up my wife or to meet up with my wife. She's been up there helping care for her mother, who's going through some health challenges. So she's finally coming home. I'm going to take a weekend to drive, cool out, chill out and whatnot, find some good barbecue and whatnot. Should be good stuff. Yes, Holger, Chicago has a hockey team. I believe they have won a Stanley Cup more recently than any Minnesota club has. Hey, bitter and jealousy, not a good combo. Okay, so our quickies this week, Dopey and Mrs. Joe, or Dopey and Mrs. Dopey Joe, were evacuated to a safe location at a local firehouse last Saturday when a private plane entered the secure airspace near their vacation home. Yesterday, La Dopey Nostra announced that we can expect high energy prices, i.e. gasoline, to remain prevalent through 2023. Ain't that just great news? And then we have an armed man arrested near the home of Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. But no, Jen Psaki, up Chuck Schumer, and the others are in no way culpable. Yeah. And the gem of this week's quickies, the man who shot Ronald Reagan, John Hinckley Jr., he's becoming a musician. He has sold out his music concert for July at Brooklyn's Market Hotel. Yeah, evidently gigs in Connecticut and Chicago have been canceled. Don't worry, Chicago's not a concert town. Can we believe this? Can we really believe this? John Hinckley Jr., it's something like the Apology Tour or the Redemption Tour or something. John Hinckley Jr., I mean, it's bad enough he's out. But this guy's embarking on a music career, and he has a sold-out concert. That's just sick. I'm sorry, that's sick. And we're going to go to our second item of the night because Vito's not in yet. I knew he wouldn't be because he said 6 o'clock. So let's get to our news notes, idiocy and crap, or even interesting thing. Let's get right to sports, although I'm sure there is some politics involved in these. And it looks like Brett Musburger is out as the Las Angeles or Oakland. He's out as the Las Vegas Raiders radio play-by-play guy. No published reasons have been given, but I have to believe it's mutual. I've got the story pulled up here. I looked through it before, and it really didn't say. Just said they're parting ways. Haven't heard who the replacement is or anything like that. He's been there since 2018 only, so it's not like he'll, been a long timer there. Yeah, he still hasn't expounded on it. He moved there originally to Las Vegas after he left ESPN to start the Vegas Stats and Information Network. My guess is it's mutual. Musburger, annoying as he can be, he is still a top flight play-by-play guy, even being in his 80s. I know we often don't want to admit it. He's not my favorite. I don't think he's the best by any means, but he is good. I mean, any way you look at it, he is a good play-by-play guy. We have non-drinkers in our audience, but for those that are drinkers, remember the Brent Musburger drinking game? Remember that? The Brent Musburger drinking game? Premise was simple. Whenever Brett rolled out one of his catchphrases, you had to take a drink. It's kind of funny. If you read, it's actually funny. Rule number one is the partner. Remember, he'd always say partner. The person is picked. The first time he says partner, the partner has to take a drink, then pick someone else. The next time he says it, the new partner has to take two drinks, blah, 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 and so on. Partner must wear a special partner hat. And then if Musburger says folks, everyone drinks one. However, if he says hold on, folks, everyone must drink once, but the first person to drink has to finish their drink for not holding out. Number three, if he says it's a foot race, whenever he says that, everyone has to finish their drink. The first one done becomes that man and gets to punch the partner in the arm. There's that man again. After someone becomes that man, they get to give away three drinks to someone of their choosing. And that person becomes that man. Dr. Pepper. Every time he says Dr. Pepper, everyone has to yell out, I'm a pepper, and take two drinks. Afterwards, each person must give out a satisfied ah, as if in a Dr. Pepper commercial. Whenever Brent says, our old buddy Jack Arroot, everyone has to say, Arroot. Last one to do it has a shot. If everyone does it simultaneously, the partner must do a shot. In the college game, whenever Brent says this little gem, everyone must shut the heck up, say, shut the F up, Brent, drink two, and punch the partner in the arm. Mentioning a Big Ten school during a Big 12 game. Whenever Brent does this, the first person who names the Big Ten school's mascot gets to make somebody drink for 11 seconds since there's 11 schools in the Big Ten. This is obviously old. There are now 14. calling a touchdown before the player actually scores. For example, when during an interception return, when Brent says it's a touchdown before that player actually scores. In this case, everyone must start drinking and continue to drink until the player actually does score. If he does not, everyone must finish their drink. Gary, my man. Remember when he had Gary Danielson on? Whenever he says Gary, my man, the partner gets to choose someone to be Gary. From that point on, that person must be referred to as Gary, my man, until the game is over. Gary, my man, gets to give away 5 drinks the rest of the game anytime Brent says Gary, my man. If, however, if someone talks to Gary, my man, without calling him that, they have to do a shot. If, however, there is someone playing the game actually named Gary, that player is automatically Gary, my man. Oh, there's a lot of other ones. Several. There's 14, actually, same number as there are Big Ten schools. But, yeah, so if nothing else, Holscher, it's a good question. Why would he say it? I think it's probably a sponsor or something, like the Dr. Pepper halftime show, something like that. That would be my guess. Meanwhile, over at NBC, former Purdue and New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees is out as part of the network's NFL and Notre Dame coverage. No real issues have been cited other than the oft-used and very nebulous, he wants to spend more time with his family. You know how that goes. He wants to spend more time with his family. Wish him well, whatever he does. It's not like he needs a financial boost. Okay, this one's definitely politics. New York Republican Congressman Chris Jacobs is abandoning his bid for re-election after facing a little heat from the party after coming out in support of gun control measures. He says he could not, in good conscience, say he sat back and didn't try to do something after recent shootings in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas. And again, the fact local party leaders and elected officials withdrew support had to be a factor as well. So, oddly, this is really weird. He'd actually received a 92% rating from Gun Owners of America, and the NRA endorsed him in the 2020 election. He says, though, he had a change of perspective after the shootings, seeing what parents are going through and how, with his own children, he feels an impact on a more personal level. Okay. Here's the thing. Most of us have had kids. Take everything as on a more personal level. I mean, I know there are certain events that do that, but for the most part, I mean, stuff happens, unfortunately. It just does. Yeah, we're going to get to the gun control stuff later, of course, but Chris Jacobs is out. So an ESPN announcer walks into a booth, wondering about the rest of the stream. Okay, get this. So the college, it's not the World Series yet, but the college tournament is going on. May Madness, I guess you could call it, or June Madness, whatever. And an ESPN announcer had to apologize. He apologized Saturday. He hadn't been suspended yet. He broadcast a false report that a Tennessee player was suspended from the NCAA baseball tournament for performance-enhancing drug use. Yeah, Troy Eklund said that Evan Russell, star catcher and outfielder for Tennessee, it was a surprise scratch from the lineup. So he says he didn't play because he failed a drug test. I don't know where he was stupid enough to get that. Not really, really confirm it. Here's what he said. He said it was pretty crazy. He failed a drug test. So Evan Russell is suspended for the rest of the season. So Tennessee's going to have the whole rest of the team tested tomorrow, or the NCAA is. Performance-enhancing drugs is what it was said. Neither of those things was substantiated. Russell wasn't suspended for a failed drug test, and the rest of the Tennessee team wasn't subject to NCAA drug testing because of the failed drug test that didn't happen. It's unclear where he got the information, but Tennessee head coach Tony Vitello told reporters after they won last Friday that he was sick this morning. He said Evan Russell's absence last night had nothing to do with any violation of team NCAA or SEC rules. said he had a health issue arise. Man, I mean, I'm sorry. That's, I haven't looked to see if he's suspended. I have not gone back to see. But, man, that's bad. So let's go to ESPN.com real quick and see if he's suspended. That's not ESPN.com. I better learn how to type in ESPN.com, huh? So let's just see. Not seeing anything, not seeing anything. Yeah, they're not saying anything, of course, because they'll handle it internally. That's what they'll do. They'll handle it internally. You know, sorry, this is just bad. It's bad form. It's bad. I mean, man, you don't make that announcement like that. You just don't. You let the school or the NCAA or whoever announce that stuff. I mean, live in-game broadcast, it's cool to do some breaking news if you know what the hell you're doing. It's obvious to me this guy doesn't know what the hell he's doing. I mean, yeah, there's nothing on their site. Looking through, nothing on ESPN's site about it, naturally. Tell you something about ESPN, that it's really becoming almost like hard copy or extra or whatever those other shows were. Yeah, hopefully he's suspended, but we'll never find out. That's the thing. We will never find out. Okay, it was an interesting article on Yahoo. I know everybody's going to say Yahoo. I've had email there for years. Changing emails is about as, I mean, it's easier. Well, it's impossible. Let's just say that. But anyway, Rick Edelman, if you don't know who he is, he does those radio commercials for investing. He says RiceDelman.com, R-I-C Edelman.com. So he goes, Rice Delman. He says that CEOs better be careful about taking a stand on behalf of their companies. He pointed out that there's a definite pushback on wokeness. He made the point that speaking out publicly on behalf of your company should only be about things directly affecting your company. Things like supply chain issues, employee health initiatives, things that add value to your brand. One note from his 2022 Trust Barometer, 8 of 10 respondents to that poll want the CEO to be the face of change, leading on policy, not politics. It is also noted that as of January 2020, business actually became the most trusted institution, and that the gap between business versus government is over 50 points. He noted that things like pulling out of Russia, things to which people positively respond, whereas speaking out on politics or going after certain politicians tends to be viewed negatively. My thought on that, he's spot on. Nobody cares what Bill Gates thinks about climate change. Nobody gives a crap what Bill Gates thinks about vaccines, other than Bill Gates, I guess. Nobody cares. I mean, seriously, nobody cares. But if he says something like Microsoft is making changes to lessen their overall impact on the environment, which will help lower operations costs and result in better profits or whatever, most people can see that as Bill Gates and Microsoft doing things to impact the company's bottom line. I get it. He's no longer active with Microsoft. But yeah, that's kind of important to shareholders. Disney shareholders wanted them to do something that was going to raise the ire of your state governor and government, or worse, result in a large segment of the public boycotting theme parks, other entertainment ventures. How many people have dropped Disney Plus, you know? So, yeah, that's kind of a big deal, I would say. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen yelling being the operative word. She addressed U.S. senators yesterday with this major insight. The U.S. faces, quote, unacceptable levels of inflation. This lady is always a year late and a couple $100 billion short. Am I right? She says that although it isn't the fault of La Dopey Nostra, she blames high gas prices on, here's the shock of shocks, Russia's invasion of Ukraine. She didn't account for the sharp increase we saw prior to the invasion. She did say the major problem is supply chain issues with demand far exceeding availability of goods. She said she respects the Fed's independence in setting monetary policy. Let's not forget, folks, President Obama nominated her to head up that body back originally as vice chair in 2012 and then as chair in 2014. She says she respects the Fed's independence in setting monetary policy, but that fiscal restraint is needed from Congress to complement that. Yeah, she also said she had the temerity to say that fighting inflation is Dopey Joe's top priority and that his proposed climate and social agenda could help lower costs for Americans, including prescription drugs and clean energy alternatives. Is this lady serious? She went even more off the rails, saying it's virtually impossible to insulate the U.S. from oil market price shocks. That's kind of weird, given that our previous president did just that. And then not one to quit while she's behind, Yellen also told senators that the IRS needs $80 billion more to do its job. She said, you really can't make this stuff up. She said that the agency is, quote, suffering from huge underinvestment. Yeah, put that in your crack pipe and smoke it. Anyway, she said the agency needs $80 billion in order to go after $600 billion in unpaid tax bills. Yeah, not to be outdone, New Jersey Democrat Senator Robert Casey blamed it on the fact wealthy business owners aren't being audited at the same level as folks who get the earned income tax credit, who he says are five times more likely to be audited. Here's a thought, Senator Casey. There are a hell of a lot more fraudulent tax returns for the poor and middle class because there are about 500 times more people in that class than there are, quote, wealthy business owners. And guess what else? Those wealthy business owner returns are usually prepared by actual CPAs, not done by the individuals themselves or even one of those H&R Block type sweatshops they have in Walmart each tax season. God, I mean, really? Do we have to listen to these people? I guess we do, but that just sucks. I mean, why is the press letting them get away with that? That's all I got to say. Okay, folks, he's here. I'm going to check a theme and see if he's got a theme here. He doesn't have one. He doesn't have the theme. The theme I'm looking for, anyway. But here he is, here and now, Blog Talk Radio's own co-general manager, Vito Esposito. Applause. Do we have applause on here?
Do you
Vito,
hear
do
me?
We have applause?
Yes.
I can hear you.
Yes.
Do we have applause on here somewhere? I got to find
we
it.
We do. You can't applause. Find it?
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
You got it? Five people.
I wanted to play the Godfather theme. I wanted to play the theme from the Godfather.
Oh.
I just felt it would be appropriate. So how's it going?
It's going, man. It's going. How about you?
Oh, not bad. I'm heading out to meet the wife on Friday. She's still up in Ohio with her mom. So I fly out Friday and drive the weekend home. So where are you playing this weekend? Any place, a pro tour, or are you just playing for yourself?
Still doing some work. This needs some work. Just this week is working on putting a lot.
Yeah. Any attempts coming up to make any tours or anything, or I mean, you know, events or no?
Yeah, I have something in the works right now, so I'll just leave it at that. I just it's out of it's in another state. So, but I am working on that, and I have a couple of have a friend who's possibly sponsoring. So this is that's why I'm been working pretty hard, trying to work and take care of family stuff, and it's been challenging, but that's all right. I get out at thank God it gets lighter out early, so I get out at 6:40 and get out there for 2.5 hours and then head back home. So
let me ask you, is the sponsor this guy?
No, but he's been a motivator. I can say that, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome. So. Okay. Okay, cool. Well, I, you know why I asked John. I've told people we're going to talk about this little competition between the PGA and the LIV Tour. Is that how it's called, LIV, or is it LIV?
Yeah, it's LIV or LIV. And I guess I've been hearing some comments on the radio and on the line, and they say LIV, the LIV
okay.
tournament.
So can you give us some background? What is the LIV Tour?
Okay, so the LIV Tour, LIV, actually stands for the Roman numeral 54. So the reason they're calling it LIV is because the perfect score in golf is 54, and I'm sure that's what that's one of the motivators, but Norman. But the actual reason is that this tournament is 54 hole tournament. It's individual stroke play, and it is a team event. The 54 players will be divided into three teams, into teams, and the top three teams will also cash. So, for instance, this week is the first weekend of the LIV tournament, the LIV Invitational tournament. Okay. There's eight tournaments set up for this year. The first one's being held in London, England. So LIV stands for the Roman numeral 54, and it is sponsored by the Saudi Arabians. And the Saudi Arabians are using the Saudi Arabia Public Investment Fund, which has about an estimated value of about $600 billion. So
wow.
Greg Norman found a pigeon, and he was looking for deep pockets. Back around 30 years ago, 25 years ago, Norman tried to create a mass exodus back then with the World Golf Tour, but it fell flat. So he's been working over the years trying to create another tour to rival the PGA Tour, and he actually got in bed with the Saudi Arabians. So the LIV does not stand for Saudi Arabia in any way. It just stands for 54.
Okay. So what's the PGA's stance? I mean, what kind of things have they said publicly or?
Well, initially they had told players that if you jump ship, you will be fired and you will be basically, you'll be terminated from the PGA and you never can come back. You'll lose your pension from what I understand. And some people have a significant pension. So it was said that Phil Mickelson, who was the first exodus, had amassed somewhere in the vicinity of $250 million plus in pension with the PGA Tour. So when he turns 65 or 62, he can start drawing this pension. And it's based on the number of years that you've been a member of the PGA, number of winnings. And so while some of these players on the PGA Tour have criticized the PGA, the PGA does look to their future as well. I mean, injuries can certainly curtail your career, which has happened. And, you know, Trevor Immelman is one and Anthony Kim is another that come to mind automatically, you know, where a career is derailed. But the PGA has looked to the future for these players. So you would forfeit that. You forfeit your Hall of Fame. Actually, you're in the Hall of Fame, but you'll forfeit any winnings and any tournaments to go, you know, to maybe even qualify for the Hall of Fame. You're done basically from the PGA.
Okay. So what are some of the other rules on the LIV Tour? I mean, you mentioned it's shorter, 54 holes. You mentioned, well, now, well, how's 54 a perfect score? 18 would be a perfect score, would it not?
Now, you have 54 would be birdieing every hole.
So
okay.
in a par
that's
72.
So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But
in,
I mean,
in a par
yeah.
72 situation, you, if you shoot a 54, you've birdied every hole. That's
okay.
a perfect.
Okay.
That's like a 300
so what,
game.
What other rules? I mean, are the courses going to be comparable or?
Yeah, the it's funny you say that. You're, yeah, that's a good question. No, the courses are you know are PGA Tour quality courses. It's just it's three rounds versus four rounds, so it's three rounds of golf. You know, this week they have, and Hoser put it into that 48 players this week, so they can't they haven't even been able to fill the 54 players. But the big thing, and I think part of the reason why, aside from the Saudi Arabians throwing a lot of money at players to entice them from the PGA Tour, is that there's no cut. So with 48 players in the field this week, there is no cut. So if you know, you shoot 12 over par and the leader is at 10 under par, there is no cut. You'll probably guaranteed, you know, last place money, and that could be, you know, $50,000, $55,000. There's a 20 the way it's proportioned, it's a 25 million purse per tournament for eight tournaments. 20 million of that purse goes to individual stroke play. So like the PGA Tour, if you're the low man for the weekend, you win the top prize. And then 5 million is going to be shared to the top three team winners. And this week they have 12 teams. Okay. And I think they have 12 teams of four, obviously. And
so each each tournament, there's a $25 million prize pool.
Yes, correct. There's a $25 million. So the Saudis put in $255 million. And so for the eight tournaments, so that means that the last tournament is supposed to have an extra stipend in it. I don't know if it's going to be the Saudi Arabian one or if it's going to be in Miami, Florida. But Miami, Florida, I think, is the last tournament. I thought Saudi Arabia was, but there'll be an extra prize money will be enhanced for that last tournament, because obviously 25 times 8 is not 255. Okay.
Right. Okay, so that kind of money, I mean, how does that compare with the PGA? I mean, what's the typical prize pool for a PGA tournament?
Well, you look at this past weekend, you know, the winner got at the Memorial, I think he got $1.8 million for the Players Championship, which is the prestigious one now. It's the silently fifth major. I think the prize money this year got up to $3.3 million, which is about where the LIV tournament is going to be paying the winner.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit more.
So the prize pool for a PGA is smaller, or is it about the same?
It's smaller. That's the whole bag. It's smaller, but you know, now you're talking about redistributing for 72 players versus redistributing for 54, or in this case, 48 players.
Okay. So, Miami being a site, that kind of disappoints me, but whatever. Here's a question, and I am sounding political because I am political about it. If you or I just wanted to go visit Saudi Arabia just for the hell of it, we would not be allowed. We could not go. You know,
but
only go to Saudi Arabia for business or religious reasons. Like you couldn't just do a tour.
You can't go to Mecca or Medina if you're a non-Muslim.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I think Holger's in the queue, by the way. Just wanted to let you know.
Oh, he is. He sure is. Oh, let's get him in here. Well, should we play it again? Let's do it. Holger, man, what's up?
See, the last thing I want to do is step on your guest's toes, especially since he's doing such a magnificent job of explaining this bloody mess of a LIV tour. But I just pulled it up on Sporting News site, and I don't mean to correct you, Vito, because I didn't know what this was, but it, according to the purse payout for this London tournament, if you are the biggest hacker of the bunch, okay, if you're some frickin' no-name, you know, guy from the Czech Republic who can't, you know, has got still using persimmon woods, you know,
Hey, I had those
finished,
for a long time.
You finished 48th, okay? 48th
yep.
out of 48 players. Your payout is $120,000.
Wow.
$120,000. And if you win the tournament, it's $4
million. It is $4 million. Okay.
So, Vito, how long do you see the LIV Tour being willing to pay that kind of money for hackers?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I've got mixed emotions on this, and you know, Holder, I know, has an opinion as well. But
yeah, Holder's tweet right before the show started was pretty insightful.
You know, it's going to depend on who they can attract. And I'll tell you, there were two big names this week, that three big names actually, that actually declined. One was Jack Nicklaus. One was, and it wasn't just this week, but it was disclosed that Jack was offered. Okay. One was Rory McIlroy, and one was Tiger Woods. And the interesting thing about the three individuals that declined is that they were supposed to be the draw. You know, Norman needs a draw. And, you know,
yeah.
Dustin Johnson is not going to be a draw. Phil Mickelson shot himself in the foot. Okay. And by drawing Tiger Woods, the idea was these young players that are coming up who looked up to Tiger Woods, such as Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, you know, they would consider jumping ship as well. But as Tiger eloquently said, this is where I made my legacy. And where I had taken an exception, and Holger, I know, took an exception, was once Jack Nicklaus and Rory McIlroy declined, it was safe for Greg Norman, the classless individual that he is, to start disparaging those two men. Now, he didn't disparage Tiger Woods, and he wouldn't disparage Tiger Woods because he still may need Tiger Woods if this LIV league starts puking, because the Saudis at some point in time, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the road, don't start seeing a return on their investment, such as no TV time, such as no marquee players. I mean, you can only go so far taking Lee, you know, Lee Westwood's going to take them so far. Ian Poulter
right.
will only take them so far. Those guys are also 50 years old. So
yeah.
Now Greg Norman got nasty, in my opinion, and he disparaged Rory McIlroy. And I'm not a big fan of Rory McIlroy, although I use his driver stance, and God almighty, is it great. Anyways, Rory McIlroy declined and he rejected, and Norman stated that Rory McIlroy has been brainwashed by the PGA. Now, Rory didn't say anything bad about LIV. He just said he was not going to do it. He has friends that are doing it. He wishes them well. You know, he took the high road, but
yeah.
Greg Norman had to take the low road. And then Greg Norman made an ultimate mistake, I think a cardinal mistake. And you know what? I was not a big fan of the great shark or the white shark, but when he started dumping on Jack Nicklaus, he can go pound sand with the Saudis.
Yeah.
You know, he called Jack the hypocrite. Whatever was said behind closed doors is what was said. And you know something? Last week during the press conference, Jack Nicklaus was asked about the LIV tournament. And, you know, Nicklaus could have dumped on it. But you know what he said? He says, you know, this could be good for golf worldwide. It could create interest. I wish them well. I'm not interested. I built my legacy on the PGA Tour. I helped found the modern PGA Tour, and leave it at that. But no, Greg Norman had to be a dick, and he had to bring Jack Nicklaus through the mud. But he didn't do that to Tiger.
I'm not a Norman fan, as you know. You and I have talked privately. I think he sucks. I just cannot stand the guy. Anytime he lost, I mean, when he lost to Fuzzy Zeller in, what was it, the 83 U.S. Open, that was like one of the hallmark moments that summer for me. It was like, at least Norman didn't win. I mean, he just sucks. But here's the question. You said, you know, he's going to have to come through. If he doesn't come through, is he going to get Khashoggi'd? I mean, are we is he? What do you think?
Jumped off. Yeah.
Okay.
Good question. You know, it really depends. I don't think he'd get Khashoggi'd. I think it
the nice thing is Norman got to use other people's money. And they were throwing some big numbers out. I mean, they were throwing high nine figures at in the report yesterday. It was high nine figures were being thrown at Tiger Woods, and he rejected it. Dustin Johnson, they enticed and they lured Dustin Johnson. They offered him $125 million.
When they say offered him $125 million, doesn't he have to win and stuff? Are they just giving him $125 million just to come on board?
They gave him $125 million to come on board because they know he forfeits a lot by resigning from the PGA. Now, in Dustin Johnson's case and Kevin Na's case, both of those individuals actually were very classy in their withdrawals from the PGA. They actually resigned from the PGA. Then they wrote a pretty nice letter. I think they did a classy thing by doing it that way so that if in fact lawsuits are sought by the PGA, those two individuals probably will not get sued. They also left the door open for coming back to the PGA Tour in the event LIV does fall on its face, or it doesn't live up to what you know it was meant to be.
Okay. So who are the high profile ones? Phil, obviously.
I've got a list right here. So Kevin Na.
Okay.
All right. Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, as you said, Sergio Garcia, which is no loss to the PGA. Surprisingly, Louis Oosthuizen, and I thought that was an interesting move. Martin Keimer, Ian Poulter. Now, Chase Koepka. Chase Koepka is ranked at 1,543 in the world. And I think they accepted Chase Koepka because they are going to try to lure Brooks Koepka, his brother. And I'm sure that's why they did it. Brandon Graves, there's a couple of UK guys, Oliver Fisher, Oliver Becker, Sam Horsfield, a good up-and-coming player, he's not up-and-coming, he's a good player. Matt Jones from the PGA, but Matt hasn't won. You know, I mean, he's got maybe two or three victories. So, and then they have a couple of young amateurs who elected to go to the LIV Tour in hopes to lure the young players. But you know what? I'm not sure if you ever heard of this guy, but his name is Chanta Nana Awat Rachahan. So, I mean, there's a household name right there, right?
Yeah. People are going to be missing him at the Open.
Yeah, they really are.
Here's what I don't understand. Because Holger, on his tweet, he said, a lot of added interest in the U.S. Open this year. Not only am I pulling for Jordan Spieth, but I'm so eager to see Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson miss the cut. Is still playing in the U.S. Open?
Yeah, so that's a good question.
Oh, because that's not a PGA event. Okay.
Yeah, the USGA has announced that they, for this year, they made it a point to say this year they are not going to get involved in any players who go over to the LIV Tour. If you qualify for the U.S. Open, you're in the U.S. Open. Okay?
Okay.
So there's the USGA, the cowards that they are. Actually, the USGA is allowing it. And you know what? And I think rightly so. If a player has qualified, the USGA is certainly different from the PGA Tour because the PGA Tour does not run the four majors.
Right, right. Okay. So do you think we'll ever see cooperation or crossover? I mean, I talked
not
about that
Greg
on the show a couple weeks ago. I talked about that. You know, why not? I mean, like Jack Nicklaus said, this could be good for the game of golf on a worldwide basis, you know?
You know what? I would have said yes. In maybe about a month ago, you would see crossovers. You'd see the dust kind of settle. But I'm telling you, I think what Greg Norman did, when he and as Holger said, he got pissed, okay? Greg Norman it seems like he's a vindictive individual. And the fact that he jumped on Rory McIlroy and Jack Nicklaus, I tell you, I don't see where the crossover is going to be a welcome sight.
Okay. The other question I was going to ask, did he really approach Tiger? It sounds like they did.
They did. They did.
Would there be a reason for Tiger to ever go?
You know what? No. In my mind, you know, I would not think there would be I don't think it would be beneficial for Tiger to go. You know, because Tiger, the only
Well, excuse me. Let me take that back. Okay. So let's say that Tiger decides to go to the Champions Tour, which the Champions Tour is run by the PGA,
okay,
of America.
Right.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Holzer just texted me, goes, the reason why Norman didn't, you know, snipe at Tiger because Tiger's black. And that could also be true. But I don't think, I think Tiger in his later years could make like a cameo appearance on LIV if it's still around. But I'm not sure it's going to be around in 10 years, you know, and Tiger would be ripe for the senior tour. He could still play the PGA Tour if his health allows it. I think he's good enough to play the PGA Tour into his 50s, like Mickelson had. But I think the only time that Tiger would probably consider it, you know, if he's like 58, 59 years old, you know, and it looks like there could be a merger between the two, or it could be an amicable relationship, I think Tiger could make an appearance.
Okay.
I won't say never.
I think, you know, and like you mentioned, Greg Norman. What exactly is Greg Norman's role?
Greg Norman is CEO, and he's the commissioner of the LIV.
Is there a commissioner of the PGA? I mean, I guess there is. It used to be Dean Beaman, so I guess, yeah.
Dean Beaman, and then I think it's Jay Monahan right now. I think it's Jay Monahan.
Okay. So there really is one. I'm thinking like in wrestling where they have the WWE commissioner, you know, so I wondered if it was real. So there, that's right. There is one. I forgot.
Gene Oakland. Okay.
No,
yeah.
Mean Gene. I met him one time. Believe it or not, you know where I met him? I met him at Trump's casino. One of Trump's first casinos.
Oh, cool.
In Atlantic City back in 1993, I think it was. And he was there. There was an event, but he was there covering. Remember when for a while Vince tried to do the World Bodybuilding Federation and Lex Luger was the prize catch. And Luger was only there because he still had a non-compete with, at that time, NWA or WC. But, yeah, I'm sitting at the blackjack table, and I'm sitting right next to Mean Gene. Super nice guy. Super nice guy. Talked with him for quite a while, actually. Really nice. If he was still alive, I'd have Mean Gene on this show any day of the week. Absolutely. Okay, so here's the big question. Greg Norman or no Greg Norman, I mean, you can qualify. So, how long do you think before the PGA would take defectors back? Would it have to be after Greg Norman's gone?
You know, if I had to speculate, I would say yes after Greg Norman's gone. Yeah. I really do think that Norman burned some bridges, and I know he did it intentionally because Greg Norman has had a hard-on for the PGA Tour for the last 30 years. He's tried to do something. He's never had the financial backing. He would not sink his own money into it. And now he found a pigeon of the Saudi Arabians. And when you have $600 billion potentially, now I just don't know, you know, okay, so the Saudis are putting up, let's say they're spending $1 billion now this year. And you look at it, you probably gave Mickelson somewhere in the vicinity of $250 million to leave the PGA Tour because that's what his losses would have been.
Okay.
So there's $250. You gave Dustin Johnson $125. So now we're at $375 million. And if you're at $255 million purse for eight tournaments, you know, that's what? That's
you're approaching
that's
a billion.
$550 right there, right?
Yeah, you're approaching a billion. I mean, $250, $125. Plus the 255, so that's 500. It's 600 something. Yeah,
600. There's no telling what they gave the other players, like Sergio. They had to give Sergio some wine and cheese too, because I mean, you know, I'm sure they gave him a stipend. Kevin Na, I'm sure they gave him money. Graham McDowell, and you know, it's kind of interesting. Two things. One is Graham McDowell. Holzer posted in the chat room that Graham McDowell was pissed that these players resigned. Greg Norman got pissed that they resigned. Sorry. Graham McDowell built a nice little fortune from the PGA Tour. He had a nice income. Martin Keimer won a couple of majors off the PGA Tour. And, you know, for all the pissing and moaning that Sergio does,
At the Players, he won the Players, not only, and he won the Masters, but he proposed to his now wife at the Players. You know, the iconic 17th green. So the PGA is so bad that Sergio, you know, proposes to his wife where? At the PGA headquarters. PGA Tour headquarters, you know? So it's there's some sour grapes right now, I'm sure, but I think Greg Norman will probably be the obstacle of not moving forward in any type of amicable relationship.
Okay, so if there's a, if there's ever a merger of any kind, and like I'm thinking of, you know, not necessarily a merger, but like some kind of deal where they, you know, I know there's a PGA worldwide, there's PGA Europe and stuff like that, but I'm just thinking in some way of like, you know, and here's where I was thinking about it in this sense. You know, golf has a season in the United States, but it's opposite than, you know, what's in Australia. I hate Australia more now just because of Norman, by the way. But, you know, all of the, you know, the Southern Hemisphere, you know, it's a different season. So it could be a way, it wouldn't necessarily have to have everybody cross over, but you could have a lot of guys that cross over. You could have guys cut their teeth on that kind of a tour or vice versa or whatever, you know. I just think, like Jack said, it could be a good way to help golf worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, are there good Saudi golfers?
No. I think there's one.
You know, really? And if he doesn't win, man, that's like doing an own goal in South American soccer. You do that, man, you're toast. You've had your last Corona, buddy. You do that. You want to hear something really sad? This is really sad. I'm admitting this on radio. So, about 30 years ago, when I was still really golfing, I went over to one of those specialty or one of those golf shops, Edwin Watts or whatever. I think it was Specialty Golf. So I needed some socks because the socks that I wore with my spikes got, you know, they were just starting to get a little grim, you know, even after washing them, they were still a little grim. So I saw this blue pair of socks, you know, the short ankle socks, and I bought them and I didn't think about it. I didn't look at the, I just bought them because they were blue and they were reasonable, you know? So somebody later points out to me, looking at the little logo, oh, that's a cool, you know, that's a shark. And I'm like, what are you talking about? That's the Greg Norman shark. So I had Greg Norman socks. I am so mortified now knowing that. I mean, but I'm trusting, you know, admitting this, that you guys will all understand it's a mistake. It wasn't on purpose. I didn't buy it to support Greg Norman. I mean, I just did. I bought them and I needed them. So, oh. That's just grim, isn't it? I mean, I should be embarrassed. I feel embarrassed a little bit. So,
You know, everybody makes a mistake.
Yeah. So Holger mentioned Persimmon Woods. I had Wilson Staff Persimmon Woods for a while until I, you know, saw the light and somebody handed me a metal driver and it was like night and day. But Persimmon Woods were cool. I mean, I loved my Wilson Staff Persimmon Woods. I mean, does anybody hit a wood of any kind anymore?
No. No, I mean
like even like,
no,
I have a five wood. I had a persimmon five wood that I absolutely love. So nobody, I mean, it's no matter what club it is, there's no persimmon anymore, right?
No, and the technology is so good with clubs today that you're actually hurting your own game by maintaining playing woods. Although I would go out to the range and I would bring my Wilson persimmon wood and I would hit it, and it was really fun to hit. It's so different from the today's technology, obviously, but you know, the technology is so good that there's no reason to be hitting the old woods.
Do they still make the old woods?
Well, I take that back. There are still some master club fitters out there and master club builders, but only probably for, you know, I bought one about 7 or 8 years ago, but I bought one as a
mantelpiece.
Yeah. And it was it's a nice one. It was made in a club, and it was specifically made for this club. So my business partner is the one that got it for me. So,
So in other words, there's no using woods anymore. I mean, they were pretty. Persimmon woods were pretty. Actually, some of the metal woods are actually pretty too. So just not the
Helge
same
is back in the queue, by the way.
Yeah. So he got his hand up. He doesn't have his hand up though. Mulder, if you want to talk, put your hand up. Yeah, I think he wants to talk about Norman getting disappeared. Here he goes. There he goes. We're not going to play him in this time because he jumped off before. Okay, Holger, you're back in. You have another thought.
I'm sorry because you're this whole live thing. You're like my blood is just boiling. In 1996, there was a Masters tournament. And Greg Norman had this huge lead, and he frickin' collapsed.
Uh-huh.
He blew it. I've seen the replay of that on YouTube like 40 times. I can't watch it enough. I laugh, and I roll on the floor at that motherfucker. I mean, I just hate this guy with a passion. He's always been a jackass. The reason I wanted to call in is because he got so upset at Kevin Na, and then also with Dustin Johnson because they resigned from the PGA Tour, and he instantly shot off a tweet saying that they didn't have to do that because, first of all, Greg Norman has officially changed his first name from Greg to Karen. And so he's so busy with all of the little backstabbing political propaganda bullshit in this. He's trying to manipulate all of these PGA players, which they should resent the hell out of. But he's trying to play them. So he didn't want those guys to resign because he wanted the PGA to deal, with them in a bad way so that it would turn more of the PGA professionals against PGA. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He didn't want it to all of a sudden come out that, if you're going to join the LIV tournament, LIV tour, you've got to resign the PGA because he needs to get more people over. The only way he's got is for these guys to think that they can come over to his tour, but still maintain their membership in the PGA.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds reasonable, but I mean, again, it comes back to, how long is he going to be around then? If he's doing that, I mean, if he was really confident, I mean, well, you remember when guys jumped to the USFL, and that always happens. I mean, when some fledgling league, and I'm not talking arena league, but like when some fledgling league comes along, remember the World Hockey Association in the 70s? Gordie Howe went to the WHA. Bobby Hull went to the WHA. ABA, Julius Erving started there, was starting to go to the NBA, and court issues actually kept him in the ABA. But I mean, Canadian football in the 50s and 60s was where many black players went, or I shouldn't say the 60s, but certainly in the 50s, because the Canadian League paid better to black players, I mean, so that kind of stuff has happened historically. But what I don't get, I mean, there's just seems to be no class about it with Norman. I mean, I'm never one to say that, boy, those Saudis have some real class, don't they? I mean, you're never going to hear me say that. But, man, they got to be cringing when they see this guy. I mean, I don't know.
I think the Saudis are so removed from any knowledge of golf. I mean, they've just given Greg Norman free reign. He'll be around as long as he wants to be. In my view, he'll be around as long as he wants because they just they made their deal with him. They made him CEO. They gave him this huge bankroll, and they said, okay, just run with it and all that kind of stuff. I mean, as far as what Greg Norman does, I mean, these are guys in Saudi Arabia who, mutilate the genitals of little girls. I mean, are they going to be concerned that he pissed off Jack Nicklaus?
Nope.
Who's Jack Nicklaus? I don't know any Jack Nicklaus.
Right on that.
So I think Greg Norman's got free reign. He can do whatever he wants. And I think at this point in time, I think he's been very successful because they asked in a interview today of Scottie Scheffler up at the Canadian Open. They tried to get him into this whole skirmish about this LIV tournament, and he's like, you know, he says, I'm in Canada, I'm playing against a bunch of really good players, and that's about all I got to say about that. He says, I don't really care what's going on over there, you know. But he's created this whole controversy where it's coming up on the U.S. Open, and 50% of the questions from the press are about this two-bit, you know, this two-bit tour over in Saudi Arabia where they haven't even played a tournament yet.
I got to tell you, Holger, I wrote some notes down, and you brought up Jack Nicklaus. You brought up the Masters. And my, you know, you and I think so much alike, and we didn't even know it. But for Norman to go out and call Jack Nicklaus a hypocrite. So during the press conference, Jack Nicklaus could have easily said and came back with, hey, at least I didn't choke at the Masters with a four-shot lead, and I have a green jacket. But did Jack do that? No, he didn't. Jack takes the high road.
Like I said, I'm not a Norman fan, obviously, but I feel for the guy. Some of the, I mean, like, not the guy that's ranked 1,040th or whatever he is. I mean, that guy's just grasping at whatever. But I mean, you know, you feel for the guy that's trying to, you know, you remember the use, I don't know if they still have it or just call it something else, the all exempt 125 and all that stuff.
Right.
You know, I mean, I feel for the guy that's, you know, for 3 years has been at 130. And thinks he's going to take a shot with this, you know?
Yeah.
Or conversely, the guy that's suddenly, you know, you're ecstatic maybe for the guy that's jumping in who's been at 130 and these guys have left, so he's in there, but for how long, you know? I mean, it's just, it makes you wonder. I mean, and that's where the PGA will have to be, I mean, Norman or no Norman, that's where the PGA will have to be really careful. Because if this thing, it's not going to, but if it folds after a year, you bring these guys back, yep. And suddenly you have guys that are dropping down because of it. You know, I don't think they're going to put up with it. I don't think they should. You know, I mean,
well, what would they actually be able to come back? You know, so in other words, if you got a guy that, you know, is way down on the list on the rankings, and it's obviously enticing. I mean, the lowest guy is guaranteed $120,000. I mean, most of these guys don't even make the cut at a tournament. Well, they're guaranteed $120,000 this week, and so if they can't come back to the PGA, and the Saudis pull the plug in a year, what do they do? You know, become a caddy?
Well, here's something else that, you know, you talked about early in the interview. Okay, so you're talking about the guy that's 12 over, and then there's the guy that's 10 under. If you're 12 over after Saturday, as an example, do you even show your face on the tee on Sunday? I mean,
jeez. For 120,000, I would.
Yeah,
well, I mean,
absolutely.
You know, Tiger made it and then walked off after the third round. You know, he just said he just couldn't. I mean, there's got at a certain point, I get $120,000 for some guy is a lot of money, you know, a guy who sucks and is ranked 1,040th. But I mean, do you really? I mean, and how long? And that's the other thing. How long? I mean, Holger, you made a point where they won't, you know, they don't really care. They're removed from it. But how long are people? I mean, how are they going to get TV stuff, as an example, when they're showing, you know? Here's our first foursome of the day. Holger and Hank heading up the pack, 12 and 14 over, respectively. I just don't see ESPN picking that up anytime soon. You know, I mean, there's got to be a pride thing.
And what about the first, you know, they finally get a TV contract for the Saudi Tour. And, you know, the first tournament, you know, one of their analysts is a former member of the LPGA, and she finds out that she's got to wear a freaking hijab on air.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
What about that?
That's exactly
You know, did Greg Norman have to convert to Islam just to become the CEO? What about that?
That's a good question. That's a really good question, Holger. No one's asked that question.
You know what? Let's just take note of each and every time he takes off his shoes when he goes into let's just see. I mean, let's put it this way. If he keeps trying to tell me that that Persian-looking rug is just a towel, at a certain point, even I'm going to figure that out. So, Greg, the prayer rug. Greg, come on. The prayer rug.
Where's Greg? Well, he's over on the east side of the building.
Yeah. He's facing Mecca.
Oh, God. Oh, that's all legit stuff, though. I mean, here we're laughing about it, but you know what? I mean, I guess, it gets down to, does someone have a soul? I mean, if you would convert to Islam just so you can be the CEO of a two-bit tour, something else, there's a deeper problem than just, your faith, so to speak. I mean, there's a...
Yeah.
So,
no
I don't
one
know.
Knows how much he was paid. You know, that's the thing. If Mickelson got $250 million, what did Norman get?
You wonder if he's taking a cut of everybody's too. That kind of stuff going on.
Here's a guy who calls the PGA Tour greedy when in fact the PGA Tour is made up of what? PGA players. And this is a players tour. You have the PGA of America, which is totally different from the PGA Tour. And this is what people just don't get, and why there are sets of rules. The PGA Tour of tour players makes those rules. And I understand Al's position; they're independent contractors. But you join the PGA Tour, there is a set of PGA Tour rules for touring players, and this is what these guys agreed upon. And why is it that Phil Mickelson was tapped to write the rules for LIV tournament for the LIV Tour? That's what he did initially, in the background. That's what he was doing while he was playing on the Champions Tour, while he was playing on the PGA Tour. He was writing the rules, drafting the rules for the LIV Tour. So, these guys, they were burning the candle at both ends of the candle. And it's like, now they want to be holier than thou. I mean,
well, if I'm Phil, I know the first rule I make if I'm Phil. Everyone must play left-handed.
Yeah.
and be a bookie on the side.
Yeah.
But, a bookie, or is he placing them?
The other thing I just wanted to throw out is that, there's an old saying, have your cake and eat it too. And obviously what these PGA players, what these guys are considering going over to the LIV Tour, they want their cake and they want to eat it too. They want to be able to play wherever they want to. And they always talk about the fact that they're independent contractors. But if you look at it from the PGA perspective, they need – so you've got Rory McIlroy. Let's just use him as an example. If Rory picks and chooses the whole damn year, and the only time Rory plays in America is when there's a major, and he plays the rest of the year in Europe and over in the LIV Tour, how does the PGA Tour get sponsorship of the John Deere Classic or the Arnold Palmer Invitational? Nobody's going to sponsor these PGA events if there's no names there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can see why the PGA Tour is like, hey, listen, you've got to place a certain number of events, in
that's totally
our package, But these guys, it's like, so what would happen if three more groups decided to create three more tours? I mean, would you have Rory McIlroy, golf three times a year on each of six tours?
Yeah, right. I mean, that would be up to the player, of course. But, here's the other thing. Who's going to sponsor this LIV Tour? Have they talked about any sponsors other than the Saudi Investment Fund?
Right now, there aren't any sponsors. I'm sure there's some club sponsors. I'm sure that TaylorMade probably has thrown some money, or because there are some Euro players, you and your United Arab Emirates that may have. But as far as TV rights go, there are no TV this year, so it's going to be aired on YouTube, the LIV.com channel, and then Facebook.
And Facebook.
Yeah, so I'm sure Mark Zuckerberg has thrown some money at it.
Oh, well,
which is ironic as hell.
Yeah, right. It's ironic as right.
I want to spend the weekend watching a golf tournament on frickin' Facebook.
Well, now, here's the other thing. You always hear how hot it gets over there. I mean, like we've heard about soldiers that have been there, including in Saudi Arabia, where the temperatures, you know, hit 105. I'm riding a golf cart if it's 105. You know, that's I'm sorry, I ain't walking 18. Whether it's 54 or 72 doesn't really matter, because after about six holes, 105 is pretty damn uncomfortable. That's where
I'd love to see Dustin Johnson finish in 48th place, take his cool 120 grand, and consider the fact that if he won the Canadian Open, he'd have 1.8 million in his pocket. There you go, DJ. Explain that to the missus.
Yeah, and RBC was your funding, one of your funding arms for the last 10 years. Yeah.
And you married one of the most famous Canadian families in the whole country.
Yeah, and
you
shunned
them. Shit on the whole nation of Canada.
Yeah.
Well, you know what though, you got to give them this. I'm sorry, if I'm in Canada right now with Trudeau and that group running the country, I might just dump all over them too. So. I mean, but still, no. Go ahead, Holger.
They were talking today about how at the press conferences they were talking about, like, well, it's good to be back in Canada, you know, because it's been 2 years, and I want to just jump through the TV and just say, well, the reason it's been 2 years is because you got a freaking woke dictator in this country who wouldn't let anybody in this country.
Oh,
that's why.
I don't know if I told you. I have a niece that lives in Canada. She's married to a Canadian. She's still an American citizen, I think. But from what I understand, they returned home from being in the States, and they come into the States occasionally. They returned home, and they had to, like, install this app on their phones, and then they didn't even stay at their main house. They, like, stayed at a second home. And they had, like, people showing up every day to make sure, you know, checking their phones to make sure that they still had the app and that they'd been staying where they were supposed to. I mean, can you imagine even trying that in the United States? I mean, I'd have turned right around and left again.
NSA does it now, so what are you going to – CIA is monitoring us.
But making sure you're staying in your house is what I'm saying.
Yeah. No,
sure you're staying in your property or whatever. Sorry. That ain't
totalitarian.
Hank, you'll probably get a call. Tomorrow night you'll probably get a call asking you why you aren't tuned into the live broadcast for the goddamn January 6th committee. Hey, buddy, get it on the air. We're watching you.
I'm going to touch on that later, guys. Vito, how you doing for time?
I'm good. Go ahead.
I'm out of here.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Holger. We'll talk to you later. Okay, Vito, if you want to stay on, I'm going to take a quick break. And this break is for you'll appreciate this when you hear the song. Folks all know Michael Avenatti was sentenced to, 4 years in prison or something for his role, for thieving from a client, and not just one client. But I'm going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we will talk about the January 6th thing. But in the meantime, this song is dedicated to Mr. Avenatti.
You were the sunshine, baby, whenever you smiled. But I call you stormy today. All of a sudden, that old rain
Yes, that song goes out to Michael Avenatti, a disgraced lawyer for former Trump accuser Stormy Daniels. I just couldn't resist it.
That was great.
I thought it was a good I actually love that song. Growing up, I thought it was the best song. So okay. You know, we now have a transgender cheerleader in the NFL.
Oh, my God.
Justine Lindsay is now a top cat. One of the
What's a top cat?
Panthers. That's one of the cheerleaders for the Carolina Panthers.
You know, what I got to tell you, you know what I first thought about? I mean, you remember this. You remember the original with the original movie with Burt Reynolds against the guards, the mean machine versus the guards, the longest yard. This is exactly what we're seeing.
Those cheerleaders.
This is now the NFL.
Oh, it got to make you. I mean, here's the weird part. She had not even come out to anyone. Just like her immediate family. She had not come out to anyone. Now, she supposedly filled in transgender on her application, but quote unquote, that played no part. You want to know what the early articles actually revealed her birth name, you know, said what her real name was and everything. Now go look for it. It's almost impossible to find it anywhere online. Yeah. And not that I care, obviously, but I mean, really big media and big tech have already gone to such great lengths to scrub her past, you know, as a man. Now, here's the other part. This is how bad media is. It says she's called the NFL's first openly transgender cheerleader, but then it says, but that doesn't mean there haven't been others. Like, what a great legacy. Hey! I mean, here's the question. We should have a pool on this. I wish Holder was still on. I would have you guys pool on it, and then I'd give you a timeline. Is there anybody out there who's going to speak out and say, actually, I was the first trans cheerleader in the NFL. Are you going to claim that? I mean, really?
And I was dating a quarterback.
Oh. It makes me also think about that line in the – remember the Deer Hunter?
Yes.
There's a plot part where they go in before the wedding. They go into the bar, and Christopher – and like one guy says – Christopher Walken says, here's 50 that says the Eagles don't cross the – because they're Steelers fans. Here's 50 that says the Eagles don't cross the 50 in the second half, and the Steelers win by what, 20? And then the other guy says, here's an extra 20 that says the Eagles quarterback wears a dress. And now it's like, well, maybe. I just don't even – what – why would the NFL publicize this? Why would the Carolina Panthers? I mean, I get that they can't discriminate and all that stuff, protect it. But I mean, you know, isn't there a way to like tip off? Because I assume they're doing like tryouts. They're doing, you know, like, you know, they're doing practice cheers, go team, and all. Isn't there a way to like throw a signal, like, go ahead, Steve? I mean. I mean, how do you even – I mean, this thing is so wrong on so many levels.
Is that broad wearing a cup?
Yeah. If I'm one of the bottom like, – if that – I ain't going to be the bottom of a pyramid. I got that. I'm telling you that right now.
No, you'd be
I ain't going to hoist – I mean, this is going to – like every guy cheerleader, you know how you do those hoists and you hold them up? Every guy cheerleader is like, I mean, my first thought is, if I drop you, you know why. I mean, it's just so wrong on so many levels.
It really
but
is.
It gets better. Last week, La Dopey Nostra threatened to withhold school lunch funds from schools that don't specify that discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity is against the rules.
See, this is the indoctrination of the federal government. You're indoctrinating children, and child abuse at some point in time has to be leveled. The charges of child abuse have to be leveled against the federal government. I mean, why are we abusing children like this? I mean, now you have to worry about whether an 8-year-old now comes out as being trans. The 8-year-old kid does not know
And you know what? I know I saw it happen with my own eyes. 8-year-olds don't know. And these psychologists are psychotic, and you know, these kids do grow up to be somewhat sane when they realize that, you know, it's just it's part of life, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
You're a girl. You got boobs for a reason. You're a girl. I mean,
yeah,
geez.
Here's what I don't understand. Seriously, what in the hell does that have to do with providing lunch to poor kids in the first place? I mean,
exactly.
What?
Exactly.
I mean,
great point.
I thought this was about making sure that kids got proper nutrition. Mm-hmm. Evidently not. Evidently,
that's correct.
If we don't, I mean, it's sick. It is. I mean, why was it so important for them to bring it up at all? Why not just let the schools run their own damn free lunch programs and stop obsessing about this crap?
Politics, right? Yeah. The identity politics.
But do you not quite? I mean, let's pretend it was the school that did it. Like, let's just pretend. Central High School, Central Elementary School, said we're going to withhold free lunches for kids that don't come out when they should. You know, I mean, if that were the case, I mean, what is that? I mean, we'd be up in arms. You know, I mean, in this case, we're just sort of saying, oh, it's par for the course. It's the damn Biden administration. It's, I mean, that's what I don't get. Is that we're actually sitting back. I mean, and it's, I'm saying all of us. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
We should be walking down to schools and saying, if you put up with this crap and if you don't get a dime from these people, call me. I will get together enough people. You'll have your damn free lunches. Even if I got to get over here and sling PB&J, you will have your free lunches. But do not feel like you have to. I mean, if my kid's in this school, I just can't believe it. I really can't.
Excellent point.
Next up, Holger mentioned the hearings, the January 6th hearings. Former ABC News chief James Goldston has been enlisted as a producer of these things. Obviously, here's my point there. I mean, at first I say, what the hell? So obviously, there was no real threat if they are willing to air this live. You know what I mean? I mean, if there were real national security threats and stuff, they wouldn't be airing this live. I mean, wouldn't you think?
Yes, and it's in my opinion, there's three things why they're doing this. The Democrat Communist Party, okay, is nervous. They are looking for a distraction. The dishonest Democrats now are so intent on getting Trump. And they're nervous about the upcoming elections that there's three things that they're basing, and it's solely on emotion. It's abortion, and you had the leak, the draft, right?
Yep,
gun control, and now you have these planned attacks and these mass attacks using assault weapons, okay? So now you got gun control, another emotion. And then the third emotion is you got to discredit Trump in any way, shape, or form, you know. And so you go ahead and you go ahead with this theatrical performance. Now, can you imagine if Joseph Valachi would have hired a screenwriter for his, you know, for his Senate hearing for the Valachi papers? I mean, this is how dishonest the Democrat Party truly is.
I mean, literally, I here's my only question. Are they bringing in a celebrity host for this thing? I mean, I literally am picturing like the Oscars or the Golden Globes. I mean, is there going to be a red carpet at this thing? I mean, this
maybe
is
Joey
just...
Behar's going to host it. I don't know. You know,
here's one of the things that said, apparently Goldston wants to, quote, create presentations raw enough so that skeptical journalists will find the material fresh. Mm. That's actually a quote. I mean, on primetime live TV. I mean, seriously, hopefully no journalist, a self-respecting journalist, skeptical or otherwise, is even going to watch it for anything other than comic relief. I mean, are you watching it? I mean, are
no,
you worried about the NSA?
I have no plans of watching this theatrical performance by the dishonest Democrat Party.
I got some keeping up with the Kardashians episodes to catch up on. So.
I was taping the Thin Man series tonight, so I'm going to watch the Thin Man. I want to watch a real detective.
I'm going to watch. I'm going to check into Big Ten Network and see if they've got any women's soccer replays on from from the 2012 season. I mean, like anything but that. Does it start tonight?
Thursday, tomorrow.
Thursday, okay, that's what I thought, okay.
I mean, shouldn't we, in all seriousness, Hank, shouldn't we really be suspect that the January 6th, the bipartisan commission, as if Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, and Ho just said in the chat room that Adam Kinzinger during the hearings pulls off his mask and it was Donald Trump, but Adam Kinzinger and Liz and Cheney are supposed to be bipartisan, part of the bipartisan. As a matter of fact, it was Nancy Pelosi who would not allow any Republicans on unless she personally chose them. So she wouldn't even allow the establishment Kevin McCarthy, choose the Republicans. So God forbid a Jim Jordan would have been on there to actually offer a different angle. It was so upsetting to these fragile individuals. But you're hired in a TV producer. I mean, let that sink in. The hearings are going to be broadcast primetime with a TV producer production.
It's beyond. I mean, incredible. It's literally the movie Wag the Dog has come to life.
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
I mean, literally, that's right. The movie Wag the Dog has come to life. Well, how about now? We got the Summit of the Americas coming up, which, by the way, is really just code for Dopey Joe asking the attending migrant caravan, how much do you want? So what? I mean, is this even real? I mean.
You know, I've come to the realization that we have an anti-American administration. Forget about anything else. Forget about the Marxist part of it. People simply, I guess they can't wrap their hands around it, but we have an anti-American and an anti-constitutionalist in the White House, including, you know, Kamala Harris and everyone that's in Joe Obama's administration. They're all either ex-Obamaites or have followed up with Biden through his political career of living off the American taxpayer. These are anti-constitutionalists. They are purging everything Trump and everything President Trump put together that was positive. They absolutely destroyed. And now the arrogance of these individuals is to stick it to the American people. And we're getting raped at the pump, at the gas pumps. And they're saying, well, there's nothing we can do because Germany and Japan are going through the same thing. And you said it not more than 15 minutes ago. President Trump was able to get oil under control and make America energy independent.
Yeah,
I mean, how did he do it?
I know. It's. By the way, there are like 20 some staff black staffers that are leaving Dopey Joe's White House.
Yeah, what about that, huh?
Yeah,
where's the media? Where's the DNC media? Huh?
I mean, you have to follow conservatives on Twitter. Laverne Spicer being one. And she had some excellent points on it. And she said, well, what did they think was going to happen when he told people that you aren't black enough if you don't vote for me? You know, I mean, she like she said, I can't feel sorry for a person, black or otherwise, who took a job after he made a statement like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
that's
excellent
correct.
Point. Excellent point from her. And she's running, I think, in South Florida. For Congress. I hope to hell she wins. I don't know what kind of district she's in, but I mean, it's just,
well,
I mean, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. Alcee Hastings, I think, is not running. So that's probably where she's running.
Okay. Okay. I mean, what the hell is the point of a summit of the Americas where there are like 10 countries that aren't even attending?
Hey, it's symbolism over substance, right?
Yeah, but that's not even symbolism. I mean, it's just idiot. I mean, it's literally like having the tour after 20 with food poisoning or something. I mean, you know, at a certain point, the PGA Tour, the Live Tour probably, but the PGA Tour would come to a conclusion, hey, guys, we need to either shorten it or extend it a day or whatever, but we got 26 guys out with food poisoning. Maybe something's going on here, you know? I mean, but now let's have this summit without half of these countries. I mean, it's just, you know. Oh, let's get back to the transgender world, since you know I'm obsessed with that. A Texas legislator has put forward a bill to ban children from being subjected to drag shows after a gay bar in Dallas held an event last weekend. Now, at that particular freak show, children were invited on stage and encouraged to tip performers in front of an obscene neon sign. Your thought. You're going to love mine, by the way.
Well, let's put it this way. I stopped watching local TV. it's disgusting. You know, why is this lifestyle that is less than 1%, why is it being forced and shoved down our throats? And, you know, for the children, you know, we've had all these sound bites for the children, the working poor, the working class, we're for the working man. And you have a Michigan representative who said she laughed as she drove by these gas stations in her electric car as people were paying $7 a gallon. And now you have these kids. What about for the children? And apparently it means nothing when you're trying to shove your identity politics, your perverted identity politics down our throats. And for what? Less than 1% of the population. And now we have a whole month of Gay Pride Month now. And now we have Black Songwriters Month or something like that.
Black Songwriters Month?
Black History Month. You know, I don't have a problem with honoring, you know, Black people for their contribution, but now everything is identity politics. We have to
we're identifying society. We're honoring Black people just for being Black, or gay people just for
being
gay.
And most of people don't want it. They just want to be recognized for being a human being, and as we should. And then these people, you know, these perverts are out there, you know, shaking their ass in front of a four and 5 year old. Give me a break.
I have a much simpler question regarding this. And that's this. You mean that's not already illegal? I mean, seriously. I mean, that was the only question I know there are deeper questions, but I mean, seriously, when I hear it's banning, you know, wait a second. Kids going into a gay bar, jumping on stage. Now, if it were kids going into a basic strip club and jumping on stage, people would be all over it. It would have been, you know, I mean, naturally and rightfully so, you know. I mean, I'll never get over the horror of – no, I'm just kidding. But, I mean, seriously, I mean, that's not already illegal? I mean, what the hell? And I'm not saying – I mean, for any bar. I don't care if it's gay bar, whatever. You mean it's okay to take an 8-year-old into a strip club? I mean, or a – 7. I mean, that's what I don't get. What the hell? Oh, by the way, that congressperson or whatever who said she drove by and laughed, Dana Lash had a great point on that. She goes, yeah, you and your – $80,000 car. She goes, the average cost of an electric car is $56,000. How is one supposed to start saving for that while paying $7 a gallon?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, it's just,
exactly.
New York, your state, Governor Kathy Hochul has signed a bill that requires social media companies to monitor and report hateful conduct.
Did you say something about the First Amendment? I'm sorry.
I want to hear your solution. I want to hear your solution, then I got mine.
You know, we already have monitoring by the anti-constitutionalists. This is just another form of unilateral legislation, because it was not passed by the state assembly. Unilateral legislation by dictators who are trying to dilute the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, because now they are the arbiters of speech. And don't tell me it's because you're trying to root out, you know, people who are dangerous individuals. No, you're censoring speech. And now the governor of New York is actively engaging in usurping the First Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Well, she created a state police unit last month to, quote, combat hate speech. Which, you know, I thought we were supposed to defund the police. I'm a little confused there.
Yeah.
But I have a simpler solution. I have a very simple solution to monitor hateful speech and hate speech and hateful conduct. That is this. You can hire one person or three people round the clock, because it, you know, 25 hours a day, three people, 8 hours a day. It's deceptively simple. Just monitor Robert Reich's or Bette Midler's Twitter feed. Problem solved.
There you go.
Problem solved.
That's so true.
Okay, this is the one I didn't want to get to because, and I just saw breaking news, the House voted to raise the age. So the whole Matthew McConaughey thing, what's your thought?
And I know I tweeted again. I'm going down the anti-constitutional route. So here's a guy who makes his living on TV and movies, and somehow Hollywood is exempt from glorifying guns. And now he gets out there and he starts telling people about how to usurp the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. So now my question then is, if you're going to raise the age from 18 to 21 as proposed, then you have to scrap the proposal by the Democrat Party to lower the voting age from 18 to 16. Because now if a 18-year-old can't handle a weapon responsibly, then how could they even vote? That's correct. And of course, they're indicting the individuals who are responsible, which is millions of gun owners, 18 to 21 year olds. There's millions of 18 to 21 year olds who own guns, who own weapons, who act responsibly. But the idea now is to quickly go after the Second Amendment, but don't go ahead and look at the root cause of things. But again, it's about emotion. It's about usurping the Second Amendment.
Yeah. So see, I believe I read his editorial for the Austin American Statesman, and it's actually pretty reasonable. I know some people are getting all over it. It actually wasn't as unreasonable. Some of it, yeah, there are some problematic issues with it. But I mean, here's what he said. Here's one thing. I believe that responsible, law-abiding Americans have a Second Amendment right enshrined by our founders to bear arms. I also believe we have a cultural obligation to take steps towards slowing down the senseless killing of our children. He says the debate about gun control has delivered nothing but status quo. It's time we talked about gun responsibility. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, now look, I'm talking about age stuff. No, I'm not sure I'm buying that. But, you know, there are some reasonable stuff in there. I mean, like it or not, I mean, now, you don't want to hear me go, but I guess I will. I really think they have, you know, here's where I think it's the newest in the long game, okay, of eventual disarmament. Not by him. I think he's being used. But remember Columbine, when it was all about straw purchases and illegal obtaining of firearms, in the short run, the Democrats thought that would be enough. But then, guess what? Reasonable, rational folks rejected that notion that people were illegally obtaining firearms, that should result in infringing on the Second Amendment rights of law-abiding citizens. Correct?
Yes.
So where did the Dems go there? They had no answer. So then guess what we had? We had shootings by older people, mm-hmm. like the D.C. Sniper, the Pulse nightclub, Fort Hood, Santa Rosa, California, which kind of smashed the teenage shooter argument. Of course, also brought in the Islamist terror element, so that didn't work.
They were Islamic terrorists.
Yeah. Well, no, they weren't.
John Muhammad, the Beltway sniper, was an Islamic terrorist.
No,
the Pulse nightclub.
Yeah, but to them it was workplace violence. I mean, you know, remember the Pulse nightclub couldn't have been because it was against gays. Yeah, like so, nobody could have figured that out, that Islamists hate gays, but they say no, it's all about anti-gay crime.
Well, let me ask you this, Hank. Why don't the first thing that you do is declare that schools in America, elementary schools, are no longer gun-free zones. Why don't you declare that, okay?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Why don't we get some armed individuals like they do over in Israel, okay, and put them on with AK-47s and AR-15s that are strapped around them openly, and they're standing in front of the freaking school. Now you go ahead and shoot that individual. Oh, wait a minute. It takes 10 minutes to be in front of the school first. You know what? If you had somebody who was trained and that individual was standing in front of your school for 9 minutes, you'd go over and find out what the hell that deranged individual with weapons is doing, wouldn't you? But,
yeah.
You know, we got to pull at the heartstrings now. This is the idea.
Well, here's the worst part. Israel, it's necessary. I mean, it's literally mm-hmm. necessary for them to defend themselves. And yet it's unbelievable. They're protecting their children, but they're bad. They're aggressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just – look, I agree. I believe Matthew McConaughey. I don't believe he's in for tweaking things. I think he wants more rigorous gun control than he lets on. But I do believe that he wants to protect the Second Amendment for, as he says, lawful, law-abiding, responsible gun owners. I mean, that part of it's a step in the right direction to me. I mean, those of us who support it, we're just as horrified. You know, this is the thing. We're just – are you any less or more or less horrified about these shootings than anyone else? Of course not. You're just as horrified as anybody on the left or the right. I assume.
The Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, it doesn't say the right of an 18-year-old, 19-year-old, it's the right of the people. And this is where you water down and you got to come to a reasonable, a reasonable 18-year-old. And when I was 18, I know when you were 18, I had access to weapons. And you did hunting, and you did it in a responsible and a reasonable fashion.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, my father and my brother-in-law made sure that I handled that weapon properly, and I respected it. And today there's no respect. But we're gonna masquerade this whole thing by putting a Band-Aid over it and say, well, you know, we're just going to raise the age. That's just retarded,
anti-American. Here's my opinion on that, and I think it's a good one. I know I'm bragging, but here's a good start. Make sure that 18, 19, and 20-year-old citizens that run out to purchase guns on their 18th birthday don't have the benefit of an erased, expunged, or scrubbed juvenile criminal history. You know? I mean, seriously, we sit there, and on the one side, and I mean, the left sits there on the one side and says, oh, this is terrible. Oh, we got to do this. But then on the other side, it's like, I mean, Seattle or Washington, cops can't even chase people. And yet we're sitting here saying, oh, it's not fair. That's why I say this. I think Matthew McConaughey's heart is more in the right place than most, but I just don't think, I don't want to say he can't be trusted, but I think he makes a couple of reasonable points, and that is parents are horrified. I get that. You know, I mean, like my brother and I, brother Tommy and I talk about, we grew up, we never even thought about this kind of thing. You know, you didn't, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-mm.
You know, so
nope.
You know, what do you think red flag laws will create?
Again, it's more masquerade, and it's a feel good legislation. The left wing caused this. They've caused this whole thing. And now they're trying to figure out a way, you know, to put a Band-Aid over it. And I think it's just another soundbite. It's made to look as though they care. Okay. That's what I think.
I think one thing it'll create is a lot of people on social media either scrubbing their accounts or using, you know, alternative names or whatever. I mean, think about it. With the governor having a state police unit, and, I mean, the big problem.
Yeah, right, the governor of New York. That's correct.
Yeah, red flag laws. And the other problem is red flag laws presume guilt. I mean, that's just not right.
It worked well in
Uvalde. Yeah, exactly. You see, CDC recommended advisories for monkeypox. You see this?
No.
So it's
minutes left, by the way.
Yeah,
so,
I know. Yeah. It's transmitted mainly through close contact, as in sex. So here's my question: why the hell were they recommending masks? I just got to ask. First of all, where am I putting that mask? I just want to know because I don't go to the CDC website. I'm just wondering if maybe you know where should I be wearing this mask? Okay,
don't eat a banana during sex. I guess I don't know.
So did you see this one? I think it's the Babylon Bee. It says Biden attends White House press briefing to find out what his policy positions are.
God, that's so true.
I know. So I get an email today from a guy running for Congress, and the header said, "I'm just a boring white guy." And so I open it. It says, "I don't have a fancy car. I live in small town America, and I've always been fiscally responsible. I go to church on Sundays, and I pay my bills on time. I've lived my life to stand for the flag and kneel for the cross and know that every person, regardless of race, color, or creed, was made in the sacred image of God." What's your first reaction to that?
That guy's not getting elected. That's pretty good.
You know what mine is?
What?
Actually, he is boring. That's probably why he's running for Congress, though. He's tired of being a boring white guy. My guess is if he wins, he'll still be a boring white guy for a while until he increases his net worth fivefold.
There you go.
So, hey, I'll let you run. Hit him straight this weekend. I said, I'm out of town, but hit them straight and take
Be
those
safe.
Tips. We'll do. And don't get monkeypox, for God's sake.
Wearing a mask.
Oh, that's right. You're going to be wearing a mask, so we're safe.
That's right.
Okay. Good. Okay. Thanks, man. Being on today. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Thanks. Well, folks, that's it. The great Vito piping in with the man. He killed it on the Live Tour. He killed it on the rest of it. Again, you all have a safe weekend. Be good. Only like 80 days or something like that to college football, so things could get real fun. In the meantime, don't forget Shellebration this weekend in Fort Dodge, Iowa. If you're a Midwesterner, Holger, you ought to think about it. In the meantime, folks, be good, stay safe, and I'll send you off with a little Hawkeye music. That's it, folks. Have a good night. Good night, all.